Blog Talk Radio.
Attention, Army Wives, fall in. You've come to the right place. Army Wife Talk Radio is the leading and longest running podcast of its kind, providing the latest reports, stories, interviews, and more to encourage and empower you on your military spouse journey. For Army Wives, by Army Wives. Now, here are your hosts, the Army Wife Network core team.
Well, hello, and welcome to Army Wife Talk Radio, the internet podcast designed specifically for you by the Army Wife Network core team. Today is Monday, October 23rd, 2017, and this is show number 627. I'm your host, Crystal Niehoff.
And I'm your co-host, Amber Bazinski. Our featured guest tonight is Sharon Chase Oakley, joining us to share about her book, A Bridge Named Susan, which chronicles one of woman's incredible journey of faith and endurance through difficult relationships and hard times. Connect with Sharon by visiting her website at abridgenamedsusan.com.
If you're listening to our show live, join in our show discussion currently taking place over on Twitter, comment on the show, ask questions of our guest, or just hang out and chat with the AWN core team. Head over to twitter.com/Army Wife Network and be sure to use hashtag Army Wife to participate. We're also adding all the links mentioned in the show in the comments section below this podcast on Blog Talk Radio so that you can later reference it.
And tonight's show is brought to you by our AWTR show sponsor, MetLife. Military spouses do so much for their families, and that's why they need life insurance. Enroll today. Learn more at www.militarybenefit.org or call 1-877 MBA 1020.
Well, Amber, what do you say we take a few minutes to catch up before we move on with the show? How's things going in your corner of the world? I hear you're getting some storms that way and maybe a tornado watch.
Yeah, right now it's windy and rainy, so the lights kind of flickered a little bit, but nothing too crazy. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And oh, what goodness. About you? How's your weather?
Well, I guess I need to be careful what I complain about or wish for, I should say. The weather in Hawaii is usually gorgeous, and today it's been raining all day long. It's currently pouring again, but it's kind of nice because it feels like fall. So today I kind of want to find some sort of fall spoilage, you know, out of my fake decorations to put up and pretend.
Yeah.
So we got our pumpkins from the pumpkin patch, however long ago that the kids drew faces on, and so we have that gracing our front lanai. So it definitely feels like fall today. So I can't complain because I'm actually enjoying it. I like rain. Not every day.
Yeah, me too.
Today, I like rain.
Well, see, like the rain for me reminds me of Washington, which is my home state. And so I love it. And today was rainy. And so I lit my candles and I'm drinking my hot coffee. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this definitely feels like fall today, you know, despite the other days that are like more warm and sunny, which I don't hate, but I do miss the rain. Being a Washingtonian, it's like I need the rain.
Now, yeah, I always heard that it rains a lot in Washington State. And that reminds me of a few years ago, well, actually more than a few years ago, but I don't want to date myself. I thought, you know, it's really hot in Kansas. And we were in Kansas at the time. And I'm like, it's really hot here. It was like early June. It was already near 100 and, you know, just the heat was terrible. And we were planning a family vacation. And I thought, where would I like to go? And I wanted somewhere cooler because I thought rain and, you know, maybe a little bit rainy and Washington State would be cooler. And so I even kind of looked up, you know, what the weather was like and everything. And it was about, 80s, something like that, you know. So I'm like, okay. So we booked our trip and everything and went to Washington State. And wouldn't you know, they had this heat wave. The year
oh,
went.
Wow.
And very few places, you know, it's usually not very hot there. I mean, maybe you know better than I do, but
no.
It was our experience. Most of the places we visited back then, and this has been a couple of days, like maybe, I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember my dates. Like at least 10, 15 years ago, that there just wasn't, air conditioning was like not really needed, but everywhere we went, I was just dying. It was so hot.
That's so funny, though. Yeah, I mean, it's for the most part, it's raining, it's cooler. I mean, I remember going to school in flip-flops when it was like probably 50 degrees or a little bit lower than that. Just because it's like you kind of get used to the cooler temperatures. And actually, it had been like colder than that, because I remember my mom was even like, you're wearing flip-flops today? Like, what are you doing? But I do miss that cooler weather. But I was thinking about when you were speaking a little bit earlier about, you know, the fall foliage. I actually saw in a YouTube video, this girl ordered fake fall leaves to put on her tree so that it would feel like fall.
Oh, what a cool idea.
And I was like, wow. She really missed that fall, you know, the leaves turning, you know, and all that. And so she had ordered some big, you know, colored fall leaves to put near her house.
How fun. Oh, that's a neat idea. I love that. I may have to do that. Just to be fun.
If you really miss it, hey, why not? Yeah.
You know, you're talking about flip-flops and 50-degree weather. The things we do as kids.
Yeah.
I grew up in Colorado when I was really young. And my mom went with my dad on a business trip. So we had a babysitter come in. And I had this sundress that I absolutely loved. And to my credit, it was very patriotic. Excuse me, my phone dropped. To my credit, it was very patriotic, but it was a sundress and it was winter. I believe it was like January, February in Colorado. And I talked to my babysitter and I said, my mom lets me wear dresses to school. And yeah, I wear this dress. And somehow I managed to talk her into letting me wear this sundress to school. That I remember it had this, like, I don't know, it was Jan Brady short, like, you know, like a little almost 70s style sundress. And I didn't wear any leggings. Back then they didn't have leggings. I mean, you had pantyhose, but you didn't have leggings to wear underneath it to stay warm. And I was bad about forgetting my coat at home. So I forgot my coat. And I remember playing outside. It was this bitter cold. But back then,
they didn't question it.
And I played outside
on the
playground.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being in the playground and thinking, like, I'm not going to wear a jacket. It's going to ruin my outfit. Or I have to wear these flip-flops with my jeans because that's in right now. Like, it's just... And then I'm just thinking back, like, yeah, that was probably not a good idea.
And now we had never let our own kids do it, but the things we did.
Oh, never.
So, well, let's move on to our field problem this week. This week's field problem is from an Army wife who's curious about how to go about doing a recon of her spouse's new duty station online and the surrounding area before they arrive and maybe even get connected with other spouses. Her interest, I guess, was picked by a recent graphic that we shared on our Facebook page. So, Amber, do you check things out online as kind of a way to prepare for an upcoming PCS, and kind of how do you do it?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do. I try to join some Facebook pages and of, you know, the post, and I'll try to ask also like what areas are around or events even on Facebook. That's so helpful because then you kind of feel like you're getting plugged in. So when you do move down, you kind of have your what am I trying to say? Sorry, I'm drawing a blank. You kind of have it mapped out in your mind what when you're there, like what to do, you know, and how to get connected. I'm sorry, my lights are flickering, so I'm kind of distracted.
Oh, goodness. Well, stay safe because I know you're in a tornado watch. So if it becomes a warning, just say, hey, I'm going to have to go for a little bit and we'll just move on until you can join us. Just stay safe.
I just grabbed my lantern, so it's right next to me just in case, but I'm good. Sorry. Facebook, I definitely, that's how I get connected. What about you?
I do that. I search for groups and kind of what you were talking about, because I really love how you can really get a feel for the area. You know, they'll often share tips and advice. And I think I had shared on one show that before we PCS'd to Hawaii, that I got involved in a fantastic Facebook group specifically for military family members PCSing to Hawaii to kind of navigate all the ropes and hoops and all that to get here that we had to go through, especially like with pets and things like that. And so that is key for me. I also find out through friends if they've ever been to that duty station or if they know someone that's been to that duty station. I was surprised. It was so neat. We were at Fort Hood before coming here, and we met a couple that had just PCS'd to Fort Hood from the exact place we were PCSing to in Hawaii. And so they helped us out. They were so sweet, and they had some books about Oahu and just gave us tips and advice and helped us get connected over here with people they knew. And so just finding people that have been there or might be able to, it's really a small army. So we all kind of are connected somehow, which is really cool. So that's one thing I do. And then Google is my best friend.
Oh,
I Google all sorts of keywords about the post, about the surrounding area, that type of thing. So that's the things I do. Do you find that it's easy to get connected when you are looking at a new duty station, or do you find it hard to connect with other spouses?
Sometimes it's a little difficult. Well, we were at before Fort Bragg. Fort Myers is a smaller, it's a lot smaller. So it was kind of difficult. Like, I didn't really find any pages, but through other things, you know, like with my kids or the neighborhood I was living in, I was able to find other military spouses in our community or through our church. So, I mean, there's different outlets if you aren't connecting through Facebook, luckily. But with Fort Bragg, it's such a large base that it was easy to find pages and groups and things like that.
Right. Now, when you were looking at PCSing to Fort Bragg, what are some keywords? Sometimes Facebook can be a little tricky. What are some keywords that you use to find pages and groups to join on Fort Bragg?
What I searched was probably Fort Bragg Wise or Fort Bragg. What I found was Fort Bragg Military Wise, and there's like a lot of the base or the post, the first is the first search word, and then after that, putting wives or spouses, and that usually draws up a lot of things. And then from there, it'll show you other similar pages on Facebook. So then I started clicking on those and finding other groups that I could get into.
Awesome, great advice. Well, thank you. And moving on, did you know that AWN has a comprehensive Army installation directory? Hop on over to armywifenetwork.com/installations. You can also find a complete listing of all our post information and guides by going to the post with the most section of our web. To these, the installation guide and the post with the most guide will be posted in our comments section below this podcast on Blog Talk Radio and also in our Twitter feed. And do you have a MILF spouse related question that you would like to ask us at AWN? Send your question to fromthefield@armywifenetwork.com, and your question may be discussed on an upcoming broadcast of Army Wife Talk Radio.
And as we've talked on previous shows, we are excited to announce that AWN is refreshing and updating our extremely popular Post with the Most series. In our Hot on AWN segment this week, we continue our Post with the Most interviews with military spouses just like you, who share with us about their Post with the Most. This week, I spoke with Cynthia Gasecki, and let's listen to what she had to say.
Hello, everyone. It's Amber here, and I'm interviewing Cynthia Gasecki, and we're going to be talking about Fort Huachuca. Hi, Cynthia. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Amber. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
So I heard that you've been an Army wife for 17 years. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Oh, wow. So you've had quite a journey then.
I have. Moved quite a lot.
I've also seen that or heard somewhere that you've been the military spouse of the year for Fort Huachuca. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I was military spouse of the year for Fort Huachuca with the Armed Forces Insurance Program in 2015.
Well, what a great recognition. That's so awesome to hear that, you know, you've put yourself out there, and I know you volunteer with a lot of organizations and are a fantastic military family advocate. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Amber.
So I wanted to get right into it. What is the one can't-miss thing to do or place to eat nearby?
Well, I'm going to go with the place to eat.
Okay.
Because it was one of my favorite places to go and hang out with some of my male spouse friends that were there as well. And I would go with Indochine Restaurant.
Okay.
And the reason why I liked it is really close to Post. And the food was really fresh, but I really just liked the ambiance. And the owner there, Tony Pham, he would come out and introduce himself, ask you how your day's going. He would also make sure that the food was to your satisfaction. And then he would sometimes hang out and talk to you and everything. So it's just like almost like a mom and pop shop.
And you feel connected to, you know, a place like that, and they actually are showing sincerity in that it's a place that you want to revisit. So kind of going a little bit on a different track here, how do you get plugged in with that location?
So with Fort Huachuca, it's a very small town. I wouldn't even call it a city. I mean, you're really far away from the nearest major city, which is Tucson. But I would say and encourage spouses to make sure to get involved with the Army Community Service there so that they will know, you know, what's going on Post as far as with like MWR activities, all the free events that they have. And then the other thing that I would encourage them to do is stop at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce there.
Okay.
Yeah, because they have a really great welcome packet for Sierra Vista. So it offers you a directory and information of things that are happening within Sierra Vista. And then the other thing is, being a spouse, I would say the Community Spouses Club. It's all ranks,
okay,
and they have really great events. And I would say that organization would be the first stop because it really will quickly connect you and, you know, be able to find friends and about, you know, that new tribe of yours. at the new location.
Awesome. That's some great advice there. What is the one thing that you'll always remember about that post and your time there?
Well, I would have to say the one thing that I miss from that post is they have an annual stand down, what they call now a veteran resource fair. And it is primarily to stop homeless veterans and also to connect veterans with resources. And I was the chair for one of the years there, and it was just an amazing experience. I was able to not only connect with fellow Fort Huachuca volunteers, but also connect with Sierra Vista residents,
mm-hmm.
and be able to meet former service members, retirees, veterans that are really plugged in into the community and were willing to help out. And I did it every year that I was there and truly just enjoyed my time. And it was wonderful just being able to know that you're really making a difference and touching the community.
So if you were offered the chance to go back, would you go back there?
Absolutely. I don't have any bad feelings towards that place. You're in the middle of the desert, but I love the desert. I know some military spouses didn't appreciate, you know, the dry weather or not being near water, not a lot of greenery because, again, you know, everybody has rocks in the front of their yards as opposed to grass. But the mountains are beautiful. Just the ambience there is just peaceful, and being able to see the sunsets and the sunrise, I never quite felt at peace like I did there. I never have been in a community that's just so giving. You can go to other locations and be so disconnected from outside the gates, and Sierra Vista is not one of those communities. You really feel wanting to have that partnership and make Sierra Vista one of the best places to live.
Well, it sounds like a great post to be at. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for that awesome interview, Amber and Cynthia. And really, this is such great advice that, you know, it really sounds like Cynthia made the most of the post that she's at. And I love how her advice about getting a guide for the installation. So great advice. I always learn something new to apply to my own life with each of these interviews. So, well, last but not least, it's public service announcement time. Do you or your business have a military family-related PSA? We ask for them at least 10 days in advance and require audio PSAs to be in MP3 format. Send your PSA to info@armywifenetwork.com.
Juice, Mom. Juice, juice, juice.
Mommy, why are we going to the store? Mom, I want you. Mom.
Your child will have different needs at different stages of life, and that includes the car seat. See, car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Protect your child's future at every stage of life. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat.
A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Get hot! As a veteran of the United States military, I can finally get the opportunity to enjoy special events, things that we couldn't afford, thanks to VetTix. Every empty seat at a concert, a game, or a play is a missed opportunity to say thanks to a veteran and service member. We can give our veterans a special event where they too can create their own cherished memories. Visit VetTix.org. Find out how you can make a difference in a veteran's life.
Ready!
Want to expand your military military spouse information arsenal, ArmyWifeNetwork.com offers military family news and resources, experience and expert blogs, active social media, and much, much more. Visit ArmyWifeNetwork.com. Your interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives. Life, our family, our soldier. News you can use. Now with our headlines, it's time for your Army Wife Talk Radio Live News 6 report.
Welcome back, listeners. We have our News 6 Charlotte on the line, bringing us your need-to-know news. Hi, Charlotte. What have you got for us this week?
Hi, Crystal and Amber. This week's news is something we all hope for. Big changes in the PCS process, and I hope that changes make moving simpler and more efficient. U.S. Transportation Command, or TRANSCOM, has announced that they have taken over the reins from DP3, who has managed the Defense Property System for over 59 years. The change is expected to improve effectiveness and efficiency. Air Force General Darren McDew, who is the head of TRANSCOM, directed the consolidation back in June. He stated, "We're more aware than ever that it's not about the stuff we move, but it's about the families we relocate and how to deliver exceptional customer service."
A smooth PCS is certainly every military family's wish. What kinds of changes are planned?
Well, Amber, one change is an upgrade of the current move.mil website. The Property Division Chief at TRANSCOM, Army Colonel Ralph Lonesborough, called the setup clunky for the average user. "Every move requires users to start from square one," he said, despite many users moving once every 2 or 3 years. A possible model to emulate, he said, would be tax software that pulls in previous year's data automatically. They are also looking at the possibility of a mobile app for the site. Another issue they are looking at is the majority of PCS moves are completed in the summer months. This allows the children of service members to finish the current school year and start the next school year at the new duty station on time. However, this way of scheduling puts a huge strain on the moving industry to provide the trucks, drivers, and packers. TRANSCOM officials are discussing with service officials the possibility of spreading out the moves. "It's all about taking care of relocating the families," Lawrenceborough said. "We're not trying to look at how we move a family of four in the middle of October after the school year started, but there are people that are that move during the peak season that maybe are single, that don't necessarily gain anything by moving in the summer. Maybe there's some opportunity to spread some of that business over the rest of the year as well. A lot of that is DOD personnel decisions, not so much them, but they'll try to work with them to see if there's some opportunities to spread that volume out a little more than it is today. There's no plans for replacing the installation, transportation, or traffic management offices, as they're the primary points of contact for movers with problems. Issues that can't be solved locally would move up the TRANSCOM ladder."
This is exciting, and it sounds very promising. How soon, Charlotte, can we expect to see these changes implemented?
Colonel Lonesborough expected by next summer's PCS season, service members, DOD civilians, and their families will start to see some improvements, but it'll probably take them 2 years to get to the point where we say, wow, this is much better than it was.
Well, Charlotte, thanks so much for bringing us this story. Listeners, please stay tuned. After this short break, we will be talking with Sharon Chase Hoadley about her book, A Bridge Named Susan. We'll be right back.
Dollars to protect the country. Protecting your family starts at $250 a month. Find out about life insurance from Military Benefit Association. Learn more now.
The Breastfeeding Shop is an authorized TRICARE provider for breast pumps and accessories, shipping to all of the USA and worldwide for TRICARE. The Breastfeeding Shop specializes in helping the military moms get the best breast pump possible, and prides themselves in providing the best customer service possible, as well as a very quick turnaround time. Check out their easy-to-use online ordering form on their website at www.thebreastfeedingshop.com or call toll-free 866-255-6779. Also visit the Breastfeeding Shop on Facebook and check out the rave reviews from other moms at facebook.com/thebreastfeedingshop.
Do you have a product or service to offer our listeners? Reach thousands of military families worldwide via Army Wife Network. ArmyWifeNetwork.com has a limited number of sponsorship opportunities available. Visit ArmyWifeNetwork.com/sponsorship or email us at info@ArmyWifeNetwork.com for details.
Welcome back to Army Wife Talk Radio. I'm your host, Crystal Niehoff.
Co-host, Amber Buzinski. Tonight, we have with us Sharon Chase Hosley. Sharon is a kindergarten teacher of 33 years, now retired. She's still involved in teaching a Sunday school class of 4, 5, and 6-year-olds, though. She writes and directs plays at school for kindergarten through 6th grade, and Sharon has taught many children whose parents were serving in the armed forces. She found that they were resilient kids and in many ways more mature because of parent service and attitude, stating that she admires the parent who holds down the fort and knows it's not easy. As a teacher, it was always great to provide a surprise for children when a parent came home.
Sharon's husband, now deceased, also served in the Air Force. In her retired years, she's been privileged to visit many countries and get a feel for cultural differences. Her daughter lives in Germany and son lives in Southern California. Because of extended stays outside the U.S., Sharon understands what it's like to feel disconnected from your homeland. She also knows that it's important to become involved in the present country where she lives because she's a personal representative of her birth country and to those individuals around her, saying that the world judges my country by my attitude and actions. Welcome to the show, Sharon.
Hi, and I'm so glad to be here. This is exciting.
It's so great to have you. So where are you calling from this evening?
I'm calling from a little town called Clarkston, Washington. It is right across the river from Lewiston, Idaho, which is more identifiable. It's sort of the bedroom community, but we are in two different states, and we're connected by bridges.
Oh, wow. So you're in eastern Washington, you said?
The very southeastern section that I can possibly get in Washington, yes. We're about 35 minutes from Oregon and just across the river from Idaho.
Oh, I grew up near the Seattle area, so.
Yeah, that's 6 hours away from here.
Yes, it's quite a drive. So talking about your book, let's see, what led you to become a writer and how long have you been writing?
Well, I think because my mom was such a good storyteller, I always wanted to have more stories in my life, and I just see stories wherever I go. A funny thing last night, I was face painting at a ranch for a fall festival, and there was a bee came along and got stuck in my paint. And I said to the kid that I was painting his face, "Oh, there's a story. This bee came along and got stuck in the paint." You know, and I've just been gifted with that idea of everything is a story. And my mom was such a good storyteller, and she was Susan in the book, and I have written her story.
Oh, how neat. Well, in your book, A Bridge Named Susan, what is the setting and the time period?
She was born in 1910, and this book covers the first 30 years of her life. You know, during that period of time, World War I broke out, She had a couple of uncles that went to serve. They came back with what they called shell shock during that period of time. Her aunt's husband was killed in the war, couldn't stand it without her husband, and committed suicide. Her child then was raised by Susan's grandma and grandpa. And even though this story takes place in rural Idaho, and the war was far, far from them, it still affected that whole family immensely.
Oh, wow. How was Susan's strength of character sheet?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
How was Susan's strength of character sheet?
You know, she was resented from the very beginning by her mother. A farm needs boys. They had one boy. He was 2 years older than Susan. And Susan was resented by her mother because she was born in June. And June was the time when her mother should have been in the garden, getting the garden planted, crops getting growing for winter supply for food, and she was very irritated that this was a girl, and she interrupted her whole summer. And in that day, the mother had to stay in bed for 1 month before they were allowed to get up and do anything. So her sisters and her husband had to get crops in and get the work done that she would be doing. So through all of Susan's life, she gave Susan tasks to do that were, nowadays we would say, very age inappropriate. By the time Susan was 5 years old, she could scrub clothes on a scrub board. She could mop the floors. She could cook. She always was responsible for making beds. She just was given all of these jobs, and she learned very early if she wanted to win mom's approval, she had to really work hard and do a perfect job. So that was her goal, to win her mother's approval, and everything she did it with gusto. She even did jobs she wasn't asked to do because she really wanted her mom to love her. And her father was very loving, very supportive, but he was out in the field most of the time. And then her brother was very, very jealous of her, and her brother was Mama's favorite, and he never had to do anything. And so Susan developed this real resentment and jealousy of this brother because she had to do all the work, but he didn't. But she never would say a word to her mother about that or her father. And then as time went on, as she grew older, she developed quite a temper because of this all being unfair. But again, she never let her mother see it. She never let her father see it. But at the age of 16, she went to a revival meeting in a one-room country schoolhouse, and she realized that she was really a mess inside with anger and resentment and jealousy, and she asked God to forgive her, and she gained a really great peace and gave forgiveness to those who had made her life so miserable. And this is when she learned that life is what it is, and you must do your best with what you're given. And that was the mantra, you might say, that she carried all the rest of her life, made her a strong person.
Oh, wow. Well, her childhood must have been almost unbearable, because nowadays we would say that was kind of bordering, you know, she was almost treated like a slave, you know, bordering uh-huh. on abuse. And so did she ever come to a point where she wanted to leave and go elsewhere, and how did she do that?
She did not particularly want to leave, but she was encouraged to leave by her mother. Her mother was 36 years old when she was married. And so she had both Johnny and Susan very late in life. And then even later when she was 45, she had another child who also was a girl. And Susan, one day, her mom said to her, "Susan, it's time you get married." And Susan said, "You know, I'm just really sort of surprised. Who's going to do all the work around? Well, you've got another girl coming up, and you've trained her well, and you can go ahead and get married. Don't wait until you're old like I was." And so her mom and dad started looking for a husband for her. And she didn't want to marry any of those men that were around there. She knew them, known them all of her life. And so, you know, she knew them too well. She didn't want to marry any of those. And then her uncle, her youngest uncle on her dad's side of the family, had married a woman from another small town, which was, probably a day's buggy ride. And her brother came to visit them and help out with harvest. And Susan met him by accident when mom sent her over with a cake to the uncle and aunts. And this man named Tom was there visiting, and he was going to be working. And she was just struck with him right at the beginning. And this had all been planned by the aunt and uncle and her mother, unknown to her. But it worked. And she fell in love with this man instantly. He walked her home that day. It was about, we would say, probably 2 miles from their house. And she made it effort to go visit quite often, and he would walk her home every day. And by the time 3 months was over, he asked her to marry him. And so she married a man that she had not known before and only knew 3 months, and had a wedding at her mom and dad's house.
Well, what a great love story that Susan has. Thinking about the time period that this is set in, kind of switching gears here, how did the Great Depression affect rural Idaho during these times?
Well, of course, Susan was married at the age of 28, and guess when the Great Depression happened, huh? And she and Tom had moved into, actually, Clarkston, where I am living right now. And he had a job at the new mill, which had only been open for a year. And when the Depression hit, the mill closed and everybody was laid off because they didn't know what was going to be happening. And the mill employed lots and lots of people. Many of the people in Lewiston had it much harder than Susan and Tom because they didn't have a way to go out into the country and make a living. But Susan and Tom chose to be caretakers at a farm that an elderly couple could no longer farm, and the family didn't know what to do with the farm. So they went and lived that first year of the Depression on this farm for free, got to milk the cow, have the eggs from the chickens. There was no income, no way to make an income. They didn't want it farmed, actually. And so there was a lot of very watery soup during that period of time, lots of eggs, a lot of milk. And then Tom went into town after a year, and they were told the family was going to take back over the farm. And he found that the government would let them live free on 15 acres of land if they would chop down that 15 acres of lodgepole pine trees. There was no house on this property. They moved there in June. They thought they would build a log cabin with the logs that were chopped down because the government said they could do anything they wanted with those logs. That was a really difficult task for them to cut down these trees. My dad was left-handed, my mom was right-handed, and they did it with a cross-cut saw. It took them a long time to even learn how to be coordinated enough to cut these down. They cut them down and started building a wall around to make a house. And they knew that by September they didn't have enough. People came out and helped them get the wall up, but it snowed before they got the roof on. And it not only snowed, but it also dipped down below zero, about 15 degrees. And so they had been living in an army tent, one of the old heavy-duty canvas army tents. And they had a little potbelly stove in the middle of it and just a cot, more or less, wide enough for two people. And it snowed every night. And Tom would get up and push the snow off of the army tent so it wouldn't collapse. And one night he rolled over in bed and touched Susan, and he thought she was dead because she was so cold. And he jumped out and went running around outside, around the tent, yelling, "I've killed my wife, I've killed my wife, I should never have done this." And she woke up and stuck her head out and said, "Tom, what in the world's going on?" And then he realized that she was just simply cold. They almost didn't make it through that winter. Susan got down to 87 pounds. And then her family came, and they brought food, and the farm had given them the horse when they left, so they had a horse to help them carry the logs, and they brought even food for the horse, and they were still living on their ranch, and you know, it was just such an awesome story of survival. And not questioning why she was on this until spring came, and then she kept thinking, "What am I doing here? Why did my husband move me here?" And that just also built very, very strong character in her, because she knew she needed to stay with her husband, never even questioned leaving. I can't imagine living like that.
Wow. I know I've questioned my husband a few times about why are we here, but I don't have anything like that story. I mean, that really is an example of endurance and resiliency. I mean, at its core, it's just the strength of character they had to have to go through that and to remain intact as a couple. And Sharon, it is time for us to take a quick break. When we come back, let's kind of find out where Susan and her husband find themselves about 11 years into their marriage. And I'd love to know how Susan's life impacted your own.
Okay.
Listeners, don't forget, if you're listening to our show live right now, the AWN Core team is hanging out in Twitter chat. Join in the conversation and even ask questions of our guests by going to twitter.com/ArmyWife Network and be sure to use #ArmyWife to participate. You can also find links to everything we've talked about on the show tonight in the comments section below this podcast on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back with more Army Wife Talk Radio in just a moment.
Operation In Touch offers special savings, coupons, and editorial content tailored to the lives of our active military families, providing useful beauty tips and recipes, as well as news and ongoing promotions. Operation In Touch is sponsored by Unilever and its brands, serving as a resource for American military families who serve this nation each and every day. As a member of Operation In Touch, you'll receive exclusive offers and savings on Unilever products you know and love. Registration is easy and free. Simply visit OperationInTouch.com to sign up today. And be sure to like us on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Abdullah, and on behalf of the Army Surgeon General, this is your Army Medicine, Be As Healthy As You Can Be, Health Minute. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and this month we are thinking about the women and men and their families affected by breast cancer. 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and while the death rates are falling, we need to do more to continue to drive those numbers down. This month is a chance to raise awareness about the importance of early detection of breast cancer. Make a difference and spread the word about steps to take to detect breast cancer early. Ask your nurses and providers about how often you should do a self-breast check, as well as how often you should get a mammogram. For more information, visit www.cdc.gov. Army Medicine, one team, one purpose, conserving the fighting strength since 1775.
Missed an episode? Or would simply like to indulge in more of Army Wife Talk Radio? Head over to ArmyWifeNetwork.com for the full archive, or simply download all the previous episodes via iTunes or the podcatcher of your choice. It's your dose of interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Sharon Chase Hosley, joining us to share about her book, A Bridge Named Susan, which chronicles one woman's incredible journey of faith and endurance through difficult relationships and hard times. Sharon, before we went to break, you told us, first you shared with us that Susan is your mother, and you told us how she and her husband suffered through the Great Depression, and now they're 11 years into their marriage, and of course they had children, but at least we know that they had you, but did they have any other children, and what was their marriage like at this point after going through the Great Depression and all that they suffered through?
Well, I have to say at the end of 11 years, they did not have children. And when they were talking one day, both of them agreed that it was good they did not have children, because a child would not have lived through, especially the time on the stick ranch, as they called it. But the longing of both of their hearts was to have a big family. They wanted at least 6 kids. My mother had been the caretaker for her little sister. Susan was 8 when her little sister Edna was born, and she just fell in love with being a mother, and it just came naturally for her. So they both wanted children, but there was no child at all, and that was the longing of their heart. And any time that the subject would come up, it would be a real contentious thing for them, because Tom handled crisis by going into a silent mode, the silent treatment. Susan always called it, he's in the silent treatment, he's not talking. And sometimes it would be a week or two if he would just not know what to say or how to handle it. That was his way of doing that. And so finally they were able to, they moved back to Lewiston. He went to work eventually for the railroad, and they were able to save enough money that they could buy a place with a small acreage, 10 acres, with a 2-room house and a back porch, which they turned the back porch into a bedroom. And things seemed to be calm and much better for them, and they were really happy that they had some stability in their life finally. However, there were still no children. And then Tom got the flu and was very, very ill and had to miss some work. And then a week later, Susan started upchucking and having all those symptoms of flu, and she thought she had the flu, but it kept lasting and lasting and lasting. And eventually she got the idea, oh, maybe I am going to have a baby. And so she didn't want to tell Tom. She didn't want to let him know that even she suspected, because she was afraid he'd be disappointed if it wasn't true. And then the silent treatment would set in. So she did not tell him until August. And not then even until she went to town and saw the railroad doctor. And she said to the doctor, I think I'm pregnant. He said, poked around a little bit, and he said, yes, you are. And call me. Here's my number when you are ready to give birth. And so she went back home. But not before she prepared a surprise to tell Tom that they were going to have a baby. And that baby was me, and I was born November 7th. And so it was a surprise to all of the family, because she hadn't told her parents, she hadn't told anybody, because she was afraid she was going to lose the baby. And I was an only child. But they were absolutely thrilled to have a child. And so it was both my mother and my father's determination they were not going to spoil me. Because that happens so often, especially when you've waited so long. Yeah, so I can honestly say I really don't think I was spoiled.
Well, so just wondering, how has Susan, well, she's your mother, how has her life impacted your own?
Well, you know, mothers are the most important adult, I think, in child's life. I think they have just a certain place in a child's heart. And Susan not only taught me respect and values and boundaries and skills, but she modeled all of them. She taught me how to give. She was a very giving person. For all that she took in her life, she gave out much more. She taught me how to listen, how to observe. Most of all, I think she taught me how to be content. She had a lifelong scripture verse that is from Philippians 4, and it goes like this: I have learned by now to be quite content, whatever my circumstances. I'm just as happy with little as with much, and with much as with little. I found the recipe for being happy, whether full or hungry, hands full or hands empty. Whatever I have, wherever I am, I can make it through anything in the one who makes me who I am. And that was her motto for life. And I've tried to put that into my own life and just enjoy being contented, full of life, wherever I am. And I travel the world a lot. I was recently asked, aren't you afraid to travel all alone by yourself? And actually, I prefer to travel alone, because I become more outgoing if I'm not with somebody that I'll be talking to all the time. I can strike up conversations and learn much more about people, and hopefully I make an impact on their life and make it a little brighter, at least for the day.
Oh, how neat. You know, her motto of contentment is really one that I think we all would do well to make our own mottos, because really I think that when we start to complain, it's because we're not content and we're not realizing the blessings that we have in our life. So I really love that scripture verse is her motto. What do you hope that the reader will take away from Susan's story?
I would hope that they would take away exactly that idea, that even though our world seems to be in the worst shape it's ever been, there is hope, there is contentment. We can be satisfied within ourselves. And what is really needed in the world is people that are willing to reach out to other people. You know, we've lost the thing of relationships. With technology, with families being scattered all over the world has shrunk, and yet the world is a lonely place. And I would hope that they could see that no matter what circumstance you're in, how you relate to the world is how the world will relate to you. I can't change anything. I don't have the power to do that. I can only influence just my surroundings and my circumstances. And her answer would have been, life is what it is, and you must do your best with what you've been given and be contented in it. And she drew a lot of her inner strength from what God gave her at the age of 16. And from that, she spent the rest of her life doing her best. The mother I knew was not the mother, not the woman that was in the book of A Bridge Named Susan.
Wow. Well, that's some great advice. Where can our listeners go to purchase a copy of A Bridge Named Susan?
It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and exlibris.com. That was the publisher. There are not many bookstores around anymore. I don't know if anybody's noticed that. Many of them are closing because of the technology we have of just ordering books nowadays. But those three places, Amazon and Barnes & Noble online and exlibris.com, have the book in stock.
Well, Sharon, thank you so much for being our guest this evening and sharing your mom's inspiring story. I still go back to her life's motto in that scripture verse and being of contentment. And even if when, you know, she can go through the Great Depression and all the things that she went through in her early childhood and still come away with a spirit of contentment. And to me, that just shows her resiliency, a term that we like to use in the Army a lot, and her endurance and just her strength of character. Thank you so much for sharing her life story with us.
Oh, I was so happy to do that. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in. Be sure to join us next week, Monday, October 30th, 2017, when our featured guest will be Dr. Haley Fisher Wright, sharing tips and advice for having positive and empowering conversations with our healthcare providers.
And in the meantime, join us on www.armywifenetwork.com to stay connected to resources, information, expert columnists, and share the journey with many of our experienced contributors, or follow along on any of our social media outlets such as Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
Your interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives. This is Army Wife Network's core team signing out.
Thank you for tuning into Army Wife Talk Radio. The views and opinions expressed in our show are personal. Army Wife Talk Radio is in no way affiliated with the Department of Defense or any other branch of the armed services. And inclusion in our show does not reflect endorsement by the DOD, any local government, or their agencies. Until the next episode, head over to ArmyWifeNetwork.com. Your interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives. We'll be right back.